Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Welcome back to Trailblazers on WDIY 88.1 FM. I'm your host, Melody Bradford. Today's guest is someone who lives at the intersection of market insight, community impact, and leadership in motion. Cliff Lewis is a respected real estate agent and leader of the Cliff Lewis Experience and currently serves as president of the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors, an organization at the forefront of one of the region's most important and fast-evolving industries. From navigating market shifts to supporting thousands of professionals across the valley, Cliff has a front-row seat and a steady hand on where real estate is today and where it's heading next. Cliff, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thanks so much for having me.
Cliff, let's start with your story. What first drew you into real estate, and how did that early spark turn into the career that you have today?
So I was about 17 years old, and I was at church. And when I was at church, one of the people in the congregation was interested in buying an investment property right on Main Street in Bethlehem. Mm. And he was looking for people to go in with him and invest in. At the time, I was still I just finished high school and was entering college and didn't really have a direction. So my father and mother encouraged me to take part in it. So I did, and I bought it. And then I went to college here locally to sales. And when I got out of college, I really kind of enjoyed it. And from there, I thought, okay, let's continue to do this. So I got my license in real estate, and I started selling houses and never looked back.
And when you were at DeSales, what was your major?
General business studies.
Okay.
Yeah, so it kind of—
Aligned well.
Exactly right.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. You built a strong reputation in the industry. What were some of the pivotal steps or decisions that helped shape your journey?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I have an amazing group of agents I get to work with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. The team's up to about 70 agents now.
Wow.
Pushing almost six counties, so it's pretty fantastic.
It's incredible.
My brokerage that I work for, Cobalt Banker Hearthside, is a fantastic organization. Really, really boots on the ground. The owners are very active within the brokerage, it just ends up being a really, really good fit for the agents, for myself, and, you know, we strive to give the best experience possible. It's why I named it the Cliff Lewis Experience, not the team per se, mm-hmm. because it's truly all about the individual, whether it's a first-time home buyer or a seasoned buyer, you know, and helping them wherever they need it.
Mm-hmm. For those who may not be familiar, tell us about the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors and what is GLVR and what role does it play in the region? Because we're going to talk a little bit about your presidency there.
Sure, absolutely. So GLVR is an extremely important organization. I always say it's kind of like where community hits real estate. Mm-hmm. They're very, very active, and we're very, very active, I should say, in helping homeowners and soon-to-be homeowners find their footing within the housing market. It's very, very stressful, tough, expensive part of everyone's journey. And really what GLVR focuses on is helping the community. It's truly based on how the consumer can get a better experience in the buying and selling process.
And having spent some time there myself, the GLVR is actually part of the bigger NAR network. So
Correct.
It establishes this, I think at the time that I was there, it was a $3 billion realtor brand, right?
That's
so
exactly right.
Real estate agent, realtor, it's one and the same, but not really. It's actually a special kind of
Yeah, the difference really is that realtors, we subscribe to a code of ethics mm-hmm. that is not required by real estate agents. And what that means is that we kind of make sure everything's done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not some fly-by-the-night agent that kind of takes advantage of the consumer. So it's really an important piece. And it's a large organization, over 1.2 million members across the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, it provides quite a bit of resources for those that are looking to get into the industry.
Absolutely.
As president of GLVR, what does your role look like day to day? And what are your top priorities during your leadership term? I imagine your schedule got a little more packed than it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's great. It allows me the ability to meet a lot more agents on that level and, you know, see what the struggles are, what's causing hiccups for consumers, for home buyers, for sellers. The organization is fantastic. It's a fantastic staff. They do an amazing job. We're very, very fortunate to have them. You know, having in-house counsel where any issues that come up, we can kind of be, we don't have to be so reactive. We can kind of be proactive with it. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate is constantly changing. It's mm-hmm. it's always a very highly political issue coming from the federal level. So having the support structure that's there for me on a day-to-day basis, it's really relying a lot on the staff and saying, hey, here's what the industry is showing us. Here's what's going on. How is it we can make sure that this is better not only for our members, but ultimately for the consumers that we serve?
Mm-hmm. And the Lehigh Valley real estate market, real estate in general, actually, has seen significant attention in recent years. What are you seeing right now in terms of growth, demand, overall trends, and how has the industry evolved? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. So, you know, the only thing constant about real estate, it's always changing. And, you know, I say that in the sense of the fact of in the Lehigh Valley, we've been very fortunate. It's still a seller's market. Now we are starting to see dips of where the sellers are. The number of houses listed on the market is slowly but surely catching up to the demand. But we are really, really far off. I heard a stat that says for a balanced market, we should have about 2,500 homes on the market for sale. We're somewhere closer to right now about 400. So wow. We still need a lot more inventory out there.
Supply and demand, wow.
It's huge, absolutely, yeah. And that's something we struggle with, you know, across the board. And it's what homeowners are struggling with right now.
That's a staggering statistic.
It really is, wow. Yeah. It is, yeah. So we really, really need new homes to be built. We need inventory to increase. That'll help drive down those multiple offers. We had one this morning where we got 12 offers on a house in under 24 hours. So unfortunately, we're back to that a little bit right now. But hoping that, you know, inventory starts easing up here in the next few months.
Yeah. Wow. Looking ahead, what are your projections for the market? What should buyers, sellers, and professionals be preparing for?
On the buy side, don't hyper-focus on that interest rate. I talk to buyers all the time. They're like, oh, I'm just waiting for the rates to go down. I'm waiting for the rates to go down. The market is not driving the rates down. The economy is not driving the rates down. And waiting is a bad, bad place to be. It came out last year that if you bought a home last year versus this year, you'd have made about $25,000 in equity
wow.
in only 1 year. So while I get the rates are not the threes and fours that you used to seeing, you know, rates in the fives and sixes, those are good rates. Those are solid rates. If we ever go through a period again where there's a massive, you know, rate reduction, then you can refinance. But I talked to so many buyers, I'm like, oh, I just need the rates to drop down a little bit more, and then I feel comfortable buying, and I just don't think that's a strong strategy. Home sellers, you know, listen to your agent. Pay attention to what they're saying. There's always different ways you can price a home. They know the market. They know what the competition looks like. They know what's out there. They can help you make sure you get the best value for your home, whether that's price, whether that's terms, whatever that looks like. It really, really is important to work with an agent that you trust. It's a huge financial, you know, movement for you and your family, and you want to make sure that there's someone that's going to guide you and help you the whole way.
Yeah, as you know, I work in banking, and, you know, sometimes I talk to clients, and I'm like, well, you know, we do a price analysis. We'll say, Okay, this is how much it's really going to fluctuate if we're at, you know, 0.25% or whatever. And sometimes it's so minimal. It's
absolutely.
Like that money's relatively still cheap to borrow, right?
No question. So yeah.
I guess they say marry the house, but date the rate.
That's it.
Right?
That's the term they came up with this week.
Yeah. The real estate industry has evolved rapidly. Technology, consumer expectations, market dynamics. What stands out most to you about how things have changed?
I think the speed at which real estate gets done is a lot faster. You know, when I sold houses full time before I built my team, you know, if you would present an offer to me, I would drive it to your office, and then I would go to your house and pick up a check. And then the whole process was much slower. But now technology has allowed, you know, escrow checks these days to automatically get transferred through the banks. Contracts could be DocuSigned. So the speed in general is a lot faster than it ever was, even since I've been becoming a real estate agent. And I think that's great, and I also think that's a little bit scary. I tell all my agents to make sure that they get to know their clients. You know, we tend to be so fast, we don't want to be impersonal. So we want to make sure we still build those relationships, because that trust, that relationship is so important with your client and with your agent, that really, while the technology is great, we also need to pause and say, hey, this is a huge moment for people, and we need to make sure we're treating it with respect and responsibility, because we have fiduciary responsibility, and make sure we're really kind of going from there. I think in the future, the technology will continue, especially with the AI, everything coming out, you know, how homes are looked at, how people are finding homes, that'll continue to always transfer and always kind of transition into something different. So you as an agent, your job is to make sure that they still need that help. They still need that person that says, hey, it might go right, but what if it doesn't? Mm-hmm. What if there's a defect in title? What if there's an issue with inspections? What if there's all these things that come up? And that's really where your value and skill comes as a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about how AI is affecting the industry and, you know, what its emergence is bringing forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely making the industry speed up. We talked before about, you know, how things are changing with technology. We're starting to see it more and more. You know, it started off as agents, we use it for the property descriptions. You can kind of always tell which ones are AI and which ones aren't. But more and more, you know, GLVR has some fantastic new software that consumer can use that allows them to virtually place furniture in rooms. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at houses now, you kind of think, hey, what's this room look like when I do it? Can I make it look more modern or more contemporary or, you know, more farmhouse? And that's all software that's available to the public. That's all AI-based, which is incredible. A lot of the new AI coming out, you know, past the ChatGPT original platform with some of the cloud services and, you know, with some of the other stuff they have. It's allowing consumers to get more knowledge, more data, more information, helping them make better decisions. It also helps them kind of open them up to different places to get financing, different places to kind of think about what's most important to them. Mm-hmm. So the marketing aspect as far as being an agent has completely changed with social media. You know, I still can't tell sometimes what's AI and what's not. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm that old. But I think in general, you know, AI is here. It's going to continue to change the way we do business. And for the consumer, hopefully it helps give them added benefits and they can start seeing it in a positive way for our industry.
It's an exciting time.
No question about that.
What are some key initiatives or programs through GLVR that are helping to strengthen the industry and support its members today? You had mentioned a little bit about AI, so I want you to talk about that. But I also want you to talk about, because I'm sure listeners are curious, for those that are in the know, there was a pretty big public kind of shift that had happened at the national level, at the NAR level. Yeah. And so can you talk a little bit about that and how GLVR has positioned itself? Because I know, the CEO over there, Justin, has done an amazing job.
Yeah, he really has.
The whole team to kind of stabilize that. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So on the federal level, there was a major lawsuit. It's going back 2 years now already, believe it or not. And that pretty much stopped the commingling of commissions, mm-hmm. meaning that it's not required that in order to be produced in the MLS that the seller offer commission to a buyer's agent. And it was the first time since I've been an agent that you as a seller now have the option to say, I want to pay a buyer's agent. I don't want to pay a buyer's agent. So that shift was huge. You know, you're talking about when you're selling a $300,000 house, that's upwards of $9,000 in a price swing for a seller. So it becomes real big numbers really quickly. And when the shift happened, of course, you know, Justin was fantastic. Allison was fantastic. Mallory was fantastic. The staff in general really all jumped in there and kind of helped guide the agents to say, hey, here's what the new rules are and here how this looks.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate. Most of the rules that we have here locally were already set up mm-hmm. in the way they were supposed to be pre-settlement. So post-settlement for us, it was kind of like, you know, everyone kind of went back to work and we kind of knew the only difference is obviously, you know, not sharing that commission, which was fantastic. So as the market continues to evolve, you know, the seller now has the option of, do I want a buyer's agent and what does that look like? And the other part to the settlement was when you sign on with a real estate agent as a buyer, they now require you by law to sign a buyer agency's contract. Now that contract can be for one house, it can be for one day, it can be for 6 months. But in that contract is some version of commission, mm-hmm. saying how much commission the buyer is going to be charged from the agent. So if I started showing you houses tomorrow, I might say to you, hey, I'm going to show you two houses. Just so you know, my fee costs 3% or 4% or 10% or 10 donuts, whatever number it is you pick and agree upon. And then when you sign on with that agent, you're now having them represent you. You're responsible as a buyer to pay that fee if there's no compensation paid from the sell side. And that's hard. You know, homes mm-hmm. are very, very expensive as it is. And while I understood the spirit of what the lawsuit was supposed to do to try to help with home prices, and the thought process was that when sellers didn't have to pay a buyer's agent, they would lower their price. And of course, that's not really what happened. And I think it makes it harder for a buyer in an already struggling area, you know, an already very expensive market we're currently in to now say, hey, now you need to pay your own agent as well, mm-hmm. versus a seller that just put it on their closing cost and it came off their proceeds. So it's a challenge. There's no question about it. It's a very big part of the conversation we have to have mm-hmm. With buyers and sellers, of course. But ultimately, I like the idea of not commingling funds. I mean, commingling commissions. I think that makes sense. I think asking a seller to pay for a buyer's agent blindly, not knowing the offer that they're going to give to your seller, is a hard fiduciary spot for an agent to sit in. Mm-hmm. But how the commissions are paid definitely makes a challenge, and it needs to be rethought and kind of relooked at, in my opinion, from a federal level, to really make it more advantageous for buyers to enter this market.
What's your 30-second elevator speech when you're trying to communicate that to a buyer or a seller or one of your fellow agents, you know, in order to be able to communicate that?
Yeah, so my clients, so our general rule of thumb is when we meet somebody for the first time, our agency contract is only for the house we're going to share that one time, because I don't know you and you don't know me, mm-hmm. and I might not like you and you might not like me, and that's okay. People don't have to, everyone doesn't have to like each other, believe it or not. So we just do it for the one house we're going to look at. And that contract pretty much just says, hey, in order for me to share this house by law, you know, we're going to sign into a one home agreement where I'm going to share you this home. And if you decide to buy this home, here's what my commission would be if I represent you in the transaction. And by signing this, you understand that by signing it with me, if this is the home you choose to buy, you're going to be represented by me and my firm. Mm. And then we kind of go into a little bit. We don't try to do the high pressure version of you have to sign for 6 months or, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have you pay this astronomical fees. We try to make it as easy as possible. And we explain to people when we get down the road that, you know, we can, in essence, add it to the price of the home, or we can ask for it as some type of credit, or, you know, we can go to the, there's different ways to finance it into the deal if they want to pay the cash for it, if the seller doesn't want to pay compensation for the buyer's agent. So, we just try to be as honest and, you know, forthcoming as possible, so they know understand what they're signing.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of protection built in there too for the agent that is showing the house, because if some, you know, a consumer decides that they, or a home buyer decides that they want to use a different agent at the last minute, it's like,
well. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, exactly. That's very true.
Yeah. Collaboration seems critical in a region like ours. How is GLVR working with partners across businesses, government, or community organizations? You guys are doing some fun stuff.
Yeah, they really are. So Asher, who's our government affairs director from the board, is fantastic. He does a great job of talking to a lot of these local municipalities. He does a great job with, you know, getting us involved with a lot of the organizations. You know, obviously the commercial is growing, warehouses are growing. There's so many great organizations here from the economic development company or corporation rather. So they're always hooking us up with those guys. I mean, Justin just sent another email today of one on Friday. So, I mean, they're constantly having us be in the right rooms. And I think that's so important because a lot of times residential real estate gets overlooked when they make these big decisions about warehouses or about, you know, industrial parks or that kind of thing. And now being able to be there and say, hey, here's where we're at and here's what we need from the residential standpoint for the community, becomes a very, very big part of it. You know, I always say that it's not about the transaction. It's about the community involvement in homes, in real estate, mm-hmm. that is just so important and overlooked so often. So being able to talk to the big kind of commercial side of this and now have a voice in there to say, hey, you know, before you put up that 15th warehouse in a row, mm-hmm. let's talk about housing, because here's what we're struggling with. You know, affordable housing is such a hot topic. To be able to hopefully convince those people to allow or to build what makes sense for the community, not just what makes sense for the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great point. every journey has its challenges. What are some obstacles you faced in your career, and how did you navigate through them?
Oh, I don't know how long this podcast is. So, you know, I always say I definitely learned the way of doing it wrong and then fixing it. Challenges, they're in this industry, they're constant, whether it's, you know, hiring the wrong person that's supposed to do their job, or whether it's, you know, stretching myself too thin and not being able to do the job, which I was happy with. The challenges as a team leader's perspective, there's a ton of them. You know, agents are fantastic, but I'm a huge fan of education. I make all my agents take extra education for that reason, to make sure that when they're out there, they're representing the team. Mm-hmm. But it's not perfect. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, mistakes happen. We've got to kind of realize that and work through it and say, okay, how is it we get better? So for me, my growing pains are usually based upon trying something, whether it's a new technology, whether it's a new lead service, whether it's, you know, trying to do something that in my head's going to hopefully help the team grow, which in actuality it doesn't. And then a lot of wasted money and time to go back and try it again a different way.
In an industry that can be unpredictable, what lessons have you learned about staying grounded and focused?
Yeah, it's so important, you know, especially, you know, if you come through the COVID times where houses were selling two and three at a time. And I can remember putting a house on the market when COVID was just getting going. My team did. And we had 56 offers in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
And, you know, you think at that time this is going to last forever. And, of course, it doesn't. I've been in this long enough to remember the opposite, which was, you know, when the market collapsed and then going through and having the unfun conversations of being in a seller's market. But you just have to find that consistency. You know, that's the biggest thing I preach to everybody is it's you have to treat it not like a roller coaster. It's a job. You show up every single day. You put your work in and then you go home, obviously. But you have to just kind of say, you know, if our team sells 600 homes this year or if we sell 200 homes this year, how many people did we actually help? How many people want to call us and say, thank you? You know, I always say the biggest compliment we get is they call us back and say, hey, we just want to say thank you. And whether it's here's a referral to somebody that we know and trust and love, or it's, you know, I can't thank you enough. Those are the things that are important, right? Mm-hmm. Did your consumer have a good experience? Did your client say this is when? Now, they're not always perfect. I'll be the first one to admit that. But 99% of the time, is your client happy with the service you provided? And that's what you really need to strive for. So it's not really the transaction number. It's really much more of just saying, is your client satisfied with the service you gave them? It's mm-hmm. so important.
Yeah. And leadership can look different depending on the moment. How would you describe your leadership style today? And what does success mean to you at this stage? And how has that definition evolved over time?
So success for me when I first started was probably trying to say, you know, how many houses can I sell? How many houses can I sell? And I'm not financially, monetarily driven person. Success for me now is seeing the success of my agents. So I always tell the great story that one of my agents came up to me and said, hey, I'm able to buy a bigger house for me and my growing family because of being on this team, and I can't thank you enough. That's how I look at success. Success to me is when there's that first-time home buyer that didn't think they were going to be able to buy a house, and we hooked them up with getting them a grant in order to help them get their down payment money. And it took them 6-8 months. They finally won a bid, and they understood that in this market, sometimes that's what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have somebody that went from an $800 a month apartment to a $1,200 a month apartment, or from $800 a month apartment that stays at $800 a month because we talked to the landlord and we were able to work out a deal or do, you know, doing that kind of stuff. That's really the stuff that I view as successes these days. Not so much personal success as far as, you know, on the end of the economical scale or the, you know, how much money did I make scale. It's really much more of how well is my team doing. That's what kind of motivates me to continue to grow the team. Is can I help more agents find success so they can better their life for them and their families?
Plays into your leadership style.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think for me, you know, leadership is one of those things that I tell everyone just to try. Mm-hmm. The only way you get better is by doing it. And you know, we all make mistakes in leadership. I certainly have. But you only learn and get better at it by doing it. So for me, I would say it's definitely my leadership style would be empowering those around me. And saying, you know, okay, I'm here to support you. I'm here to help you do what you do, but go out there and do it. And then, you know, whatever it is you need from me on my end, I'll do it. And then that's really what I try to do with all of my agents, all of my staff, you know, through all my companies.
Yeah. For emerging leaders, whether in real estate or beyond, what advice would you offer them as they try to find their own path?
Start early, start often. you know, find your passion in whatever it is that you're doing and take it by the reins and say, this is it, and then own it. You know, I tell my agents, I said, you want to do it, whatever it is you're doing, and let's just say you're a real estate agent, you know, you want to do it until your eyeballs bleed, until all you're doing is real estate. Don't try to do 16 other things, just do real estate until you master it. Once you completely master it and you know it better than the back of your hand, then add something else. You know, so often you talk to agents and like, well, I have this, and they never really kind of find that success they're looking for. So just figure out whatever it is you're passionate about and then just go wholeheartedly at it 100% until you're exhausted. And then until you know it better than anybody else you think could possibly know it. And then at that point in time, say, okay, now I can add something different to my plate.
Mm-hmm. Cliff, if you were to sit down at all of the county council, or had, you know, 10, 15 minutes with, I love that you raised your eyebrows on that one, or, you know, 15 minutes with a municipal leader, what would that conversation look like insofar as it relates to real estate and how this region continues to grow and evolve? Like, what do we need? What do they need to know?
Yeah, you know? That's an amazing question. So it's they have to find the balance between allowing builders and developers to do what they do and not adding what I'm going to say is silly requirements onto projects that they might even not care about. Sometimes the stuff I hear is, you know, they're adding this stuff just so they can pretend they did something, I feel like sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's so important to understand that while, you know, development can be ugly and development can be taking down trees and parks and places that people don't want, the other side of it is you need affordable housing, and you don't get affordable housing without inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the restrictions, you know, I guess it would be, I hope they understand that every time they put a restriction on a developer or a builder that has a cost to it, that cost trickles down to the tenant.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an apartment building. And I feel like sometimes they add stuff into the plan that isn't really necessary to get the project completed, but they do it because they think in their head, oh, this will be part of their legacy, or this will just be fun or pretty or whatever it is they do it, not realizing that all that affects the price of that apartment, which is going to be rented to the tenant, and it gets more expensive. So when you start adding extras or fluff or things that don't really affect the things that don't really need to be done, you know, builders are fantastic, developers are fantastic of getting to the point of the project and saying, here's the crux of it. If I build this, I can get affordable housing, and here's what my rent's going to look like. And if they go to a you know, local municipality that says, well, we've always wanted to have whatever it is, and they put these extra restrictions, all those extra restrictions that cost that builder developer more money ultimately just turn into higher rent dollars or higher rent costs for those tenants.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're the same people saying, we need affordable housing, and I kind of always want to go, but you just got rid of the affordable housing opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a slippery thing. I think from the federal level, it can wash down. I think there's a lot of things we can try to do to increase affordable housing. But I also think that sometimes, you know, municipalities get a little too headstrong of putting such crazy restrictions on these builders and developers that they just say, I'm not doing it. And they move on, and then no one wins.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. When you think about your legacy, both in the industry and in the community, what do you hope people say about your impact? And, you know, what do you plan to do with that presidency? You know, what do you want that legacy piece to look like or be?
That's a great question, too. So I would say for my legacy, you know, I guess for my legacy for the president, I would say that I showed up. I think that's such an important thing, and that I try to listen to everybody. I think when you become the president of a big association like GLVR, you have to kind of put your own personal business on the side and think what's best for the community, what's best for the industry, what's best for the agents that are members of the board, of the Greater Lehigh Valley board. And sometimes that might negatively impact my business, but it's not about me when I'm sitting in that president's seat. It's about the actual community itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to think very, very broadly when it comes to that. Even if the role makes my business harder personally, that's okay, because it has to be good for everybody else. So I would say, I hope for my legacy that people understand, you know, to get involved. I think it's very important, just like you're doing with this amazing show, is to get involved with the community. You know, I tell every agent that I talk to, even if it's not GLVR, get involved with something local here.
Mm-hmm.
We all live here. I grew up here. I went to Freedom High School down the street. So, you know, we're all impacted by all the decisions we make as real estate agents, and own that and treat that with respect and, that, you know, what it should be. And, you know, try to build on that and really kind of make the community better.
What are you most proud of?
My kids. I have two amazing boys that I love. So it would be them. I know that's probably like the corny, cheesy answer. What am I most proud of as far as real estate goes? Again, it would just be helping families. And I just get a huge kick out of watching someone that never thought they were going to own a home or, you know, get to move up to a different home, or even calling somebody we sold a house to 5 years ago and say, you're not going to believe this. Your house is worth $50,000 or $75,000 more. And they're like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? And whether they move or they don't move, just being able to have those great conversations, that's the part that I love.
And unexpectedly helping them build wealth.
Exactly right. Yes, generational wealth has become such a big thing in this area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cliff, this has been a powerful conversation, one that reminds us that behind every market trend, every transaction, every headline, there are people, values, and leadership driving it forward. Your perspective on growth, resilience, and responsibility in this industry is not only insightful, it's necessary, especially in a time when so many are trying to find their footing in a changing landscape. Thank you for the work you're doing, for the leadership you're bringing to the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors, and for sharing your story with us today. And to our listeners, this is what Trailblazers is all about, real conversations with real leaders, shaping the future right here in our community. Catch this episode anytime on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, keep leading, keep building, and keep blazing your own trail.